Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. This podcast is all about conversations about healing and rising from the ashes of your grief and trauma. In this podcast, we will be deconstructing and highlighting the different aspects of grief and loss. I'm your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. I am your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella. I am here with Dr. Nicole Carden, and we are going to be talking about suicide today. Heavy topic, but introduce us to you.
Well, hi, I'm Dr. Nikki Carden. So formal.
I like to say Nicole.
I know.
It's Nikki. I know.
I'm a licensed clinical psychologist. I'm licensed in the states of Pennsylvania and Delaware. I am so blessed to be a part of the Center for Grief and Trauma Therapy here currently. Historically, I have a lot of background working in inpatient psychiatric hospitals, come from corrections as well, all that good stuff. I am a certified thanatologist, thanks to you, which one of my best friends, five-year-old, so aptly puts, he says that I am a death doctor.
You're a death doctor.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
And you're EMDR trained.
I'm EMDR trained.
Which we just got done talking. I'll have a whole episode on EMDR.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And then I am currently the board president for the Delaware chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. That's just a fancy word for I'm the psychologist that's on the board. So super active in all kinds of suicide, outreach, education, prevention, all that good stuff. Personal losses that we'll talk about later on. So Naturally, it just felt right for me to be able to kind of contribute and participate in this podcast.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so And in Philly, you were very much involved up in Philadelphia as well.
Yeah. So we started in the Philadelphia chapter, my husband and myself, and then when I took the job at the prison in Delaware, we made the move and just the transition was kind of natural and ended up on the board here, so.
And here you are.
Yep.
You're dedicated to this.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to talk a lot about your personal story, about what got you involved. And I think a lot of us have had personal stories that have brought us to working in the field of thanatology or death, loss, and grief. And I think that brings a special kind of component to being able to bring our own experiences in to, you know, the work that we do.
Yeah. I joke, I mean? I'm like, suicide is life.
Oh my God.
But I kind of can say that. So.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about suicide.
Yeah.
This is a hot topic, and when I say hot topic, it's an emotionally, you know, charged topic. Mm-hmm. It's one a lot of us have experienced. It can ravish people's lives. And where would you like to start? What do we need to know?
Well, before we dive in, I want to make sure that we put out kind of a disclaimer for everyone listening.
Disclaim.
Yes, this is going to be, it's a heavy topic, but nothing's going to be said here that's going to be graphic in nature. Nothing that I would consider, if we're going to air quote it, like a trigger situation. We're not going to describe anything in detail. We're not going to go into anything that's going to harm someone.
Okay.
But also, as you're listening to this, especially when we get to the personal story piece, to be a little bit prepared that some things might hit a little closer to home than you realize, or you might be impacted by something that you didn't expect initially. So again, I just want to put that out there, kind of whatever avenue you're listening to this through later, be prepared to maybe pause, step away if you need to, have a support to talk to afterwards. Again, it's just like, it's really heavy stuff. Can I swear on the podcast?
Yeah, you can totally swear on the podcast. It's heavy shit.
Right.
No, that's the cool thing about having your own podcast. You can cuss. You can do all the things.
All right. Yeah. Because, you know.
And keep your clothes on. But, I mean, you know, other than that, we're good.
Right. Yeah. Because you know how I am. So. Oh, also, I brought you some suicide swag.
I love suicide swag. Oh, my God. Yes. I love it. Thank you.
So you're welcome.
Right now. Matches my walls.
So when I usually like to start talking to people, I like to throw out some numbers. Okay. I'm not a statistical person. I hate research. But it's really important when we're talking about this topic.
Yeah.
So I like to kind of dig into the shock value piece a little bit. So right now, the World Health Organization is in charge of kind of like the global statistics, if you will. And they're saying that at minimum, because obviously like this stuff is grossly underreported because it's suicide statistics and like people aren't really disclosing all the time. Mm-hmm. They're saying that there's about at least 800,000 suicides globally per year. So that's one every 40 seconds.
Oh my God.
So if podcast or this conversation is an hour, we're going to have 90 suicides.
Oh my God.
So that's globally, again, totally underreported. There's going to be more than that.
Sure.
And then if we break it down to just the United States, the most recent stuff from the CDC is in 2021. And they're saying that in 2021, 48,000 and change were deaths by suicide. So that's at least 130 a day.
Oh my God.
And it'll be like 5 or 6 while we're having this conversation. So like, chew on that. I mean, we're talking about this astronomical health issue that even though people are like, like, because there's so much stigma attached to it, it's like, this isn't appropriate for me. This doesn't pertain to me. Mm-hmm. This isn't an issue that I have to deal with. Everyone that I know is fine. I'm fine. Well, when we're looking at these numbers, the suicide rate per year totals more than all homicides, natural disasters, and war deaths combined.
Combined.
So if you put all the homicides, the natural disaster deaths, and the war deaths, United States, combined per year, there's more suicide deaths.
Oh my God.
It's just like, I don't know. I hear this stuff all the time. I talk about it all the time. And every time I say it, I'm like, what the hell is happening here? This is just like,
It's
so bananas and it's such a crisis.
I cannot wait to find out a little bit more about why you think this has happened. Like what the hell is happening here?
Yeah.
You said something really important and I want to point this out early in our conversation. You said died by suicide and not commit suicide,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, let's talk a little bit about why we do that.
Language is a huge piece when we're having this conversation.
Okay.
Because again, we're talking about something that's been so stigmatized for so long. Yes, we are moving in the right direction. People are having conversations. People are paying attention to their mental health again.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change the fact that the language hasn't quite shifted yet, that hasn't caught on. And when you use the word committed, which you hear all the time, oh, so-and-so committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
To use the word commit, it has this negative connotation of like, you commit murder, you commit adultery, you get committed to the psych hospital. Like it has this stigma, this judgment that goes to it.
Like a crime.
Yeah. So we're trying to shift that from something that's not, so, like it doesn't have the judgment that's attached to it, to something that we're just kind of understanding it. And when it doesn't have that negative connotation, then it's a lot easier to talk about. And if, you know, you're struggling with something, and it's just kind of a neutral topic, you're much more prone to have this conversation than if we're using like different language.
Mm-hmm.
So instead we tell people to use the died by suicide, took their life, again, just to kind of take the edge off and kind of soften it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when we're talking about suicide attempts, people use like the words failed or successful.
What is like, that about?
So this is an accomplishment now? Like, good job.
It's
you
like
succeeded.
A test.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's successfully suicidal. I remember when I first heard that, I'm like, this is seriously happening.
Congrats.
Right,
well done.
Awful. Awful.
And also I've had people come in to me like within the psych hospital and different things like that and say, I can't even kill myself right.
Oof.
Like the weight of that.
Wow.
So again, it's just kind of teaching people to call it what it is. You know, they made a suicide attempt. Obviously, if they're still alive, it's still an attempt.
Right.
So we don't have to really clarify too much.
Right.
But again, it's that language. It's just kind of getting people to understand that if you're using more delicate, more neutral language around it, people are a lot more likely to have the conversations and then maybe to kind of seek help and be able to get what they need moving forward. So I'm glad you brought that up. Language is huge.
It's huge. And one of the episodes earlier on, I forget which one it is, but one of the episodes is on disenfranchised grief. And we talked about how obviously suicide falls within disenfranchised grief, which is for you guys is the death of a person a loss that is not recognized, it's not socially sanctioned as being, having the social validation in order to heal, or it's not recognized as being a loss, or the person who is lost, you know, was lost wasn't even considered a relationship, or the cultural differences and that kind of thing, and the way that people grieve is wrong. But in terms of, you know, I lost my brother to a drug overdose. When he first died, when Damian first died, I didn't want to tell anybody.
I hear you.
I didn't want to tell. And I remember just, you know, being like for a long time, not even saying, yeah, he died from a drug overdose. It just kind of hid that. Mm-hmm. And then I got to a point, once I realized a little bit more, I was like, he died from a drug overdose. And I was thinking in my head, and if you got a problem with that, you can kiss my ass.
Right.
Like, that's not my problem. That's
yeah.
your problem.
Yeah.
So, but suicide definitely falls within the list of stigmatized losses and disenfranchised losses.
Big time.
There's like this judgment, you know, that ends yeah. up, that you end up trying to yeah. avoid, you know what I mean? And it's already freaking hard enough right. as it is to lose somebody to yeah. suicide. So,
because folks don't have an understanding of what drives it.
Like, say more about that.
Okay. So when we're talking about what results in a suicide, what causes, if you will, I don't like to use the word because it's like a cause effect then.
Yeah.
But why does someone take their life?
Yeah.
So the way I describe it, do you remember Trivial Pursuit?
Yes, I remember Trivial Pursuit.
All right, for anyone who's younger and doesn't know what Trivial Pursuit is.
The 80s Trivial Pursuit is the best one, but that's all right.
So you have this pie, and the objective is to put all of the pieces in the pie. And when you do, you win. So when I describe suicide, there's no one singular cause for a suicide death ever. I mean, there could be like one major contributing factor that pushes it over, mm-hmm. but you need this whole pie first. And I know it sounds like redundant language because you hear everyone talk about risk factors, and that they throw those words around and you go to these trainings mm-hmm. for employment or whatnot, and they're like, oh, know the risk factors, know this stuff. But this is real talk. So you need like a perfect combination of, and I'll go through them all in a minute, of okay. health issues, mental health issues, situational stressors, and all of this stuff has to combine, fill the pie, and result in this overwhelming feeling of just like hopelessness and despair. And that gets you to the point where you just don't see any other way out. There is no other way to end the pain.
Just not worth living.
Yeah.
There's no, like, it's not like you're only guilty. It's like who you are mm-hmm. is not worth being alive.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you want me to do... Do you want to talk about risk factors now?
Yeah,
sure.
Do it.
So when we break them down, and this is applicable to like all humans all the time across the board, whether you're struggling, whether someone you know is struggling, like this is something that everyone should be aware of, needs to pay attention to. You need to track it like in yourself day to day, because no one wakes up and goes from perfectly, with the air quote every once in a while, fine,
yeah.
to suicidal.
Right.
There's all of these things that build that people aren't quite noticing and paying attention to along the way. So the first thing when we're talking about risk factors, and this is just shit that sets you up for failure in the future. Mm-hmm. You can't necessarily control the majority of this stuff. It's just there, it's part of you already. And it just makes you a little bit more likely to struggle. So we start with health. So with that, we're talking about mental health. So we're talking about any number of significant mental health issues, and it can be depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, anxiety, substance use yeah. disorders, PTSD. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be some crazy stigmatized, like major, severe and persistent mental illness. Okay. Just mental health difficulties in general.
Okay.
If you have them, put a piece in the pie.
Okay. Big one.
Yeah.
Got it.
And then, a huge one, because they guesstimate that at least 90% of people who take their life had a diagnosable and treatable mental health condition at the time of their death for suicide. Doesn't mean they were diagnosed, doesn't mean they were getting treatment, doesn't mean they had any idea what was going on, but it was there.
Right.
So mental health is a huge contributing factor, obviously. Physical health is really, really big. Hmm. So we're talking about terminal illness, chronic illness, chronic pain, multiple illnesses, you know, just kind of stacked on top of each other.
Okay.
We're talking about brain injuries. There's more, but we're talking about different things that we're kind of struggling with physically on top of it. And then all that comes together and just this perfect little, you know, again, pieces of the pie for your health. Mm-hmm. Another big piece when we're talking about risk factors is history. So it's like, thanks, mom and dad. If anyone in your family has mm-hmm. a history of mental health conditions, substance abuse issues, suicidal ideation or behavior, check, check, check. These are all little pieces that, again, put you at risk for something happening to you down the line. Let's see. Trauma. So sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, neglect. Mm. Any kind of trauma history obviously kind of sets you up. Again, it's a risk factor. This isn't cause effect, but this is another piece of the pie that puts you at higher risk for something happening. If you have any history of suicidal ideation or behavior yourself, that just ups your ante. It makes you a higher risk for something happening down the line. I'm forgetting something. Loss is big too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously nothing's more relevant in this room, but mm-hmm. like loss puts you up for, you know, another piece.
Any kind of loss.
Any kind of
loss. I want to be really, really clear. Mm-hmm. Really, really clear.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be death of a loved one. It can be any kind of loss. And I'm sure you've touched on all of those.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have health, we have history, and then the last risk factor that we really pay attention to is environment. And there we're looking at whether or not you have access to any kind of means. So if you are a household that has firearms, you're automatically at higher risk if there's a bunch of meds in the medicine cabinet. If you're in a home that has a garage with a car.
Yeah.
Like these are all, and you don't think about it because like we all have this shit.
Right.
Like, this is in all of our homes all the time, right. And you're not paying attention to the fact that if someone is sliding, you know, downward, these are risk factors.
And it can be so gradual, too,
because
I think that for some people, and tell me if I'm wrong, but some people get blindsided that the person died by suicide. And some people, you know, there was this, you know, there have been previous suicide attempts or a lot of suicidal ideation that we had seen in their, you know, and so I think that in that case, being anticipated versus unanticipated makes a huge difference about how the person ends up, you know, the survivors end up coping with the fallout of the actual loss itself.
Yeah, absolutely. The other pieces of your environment that you have to pay attention to are like prolonged stressors.
Mm.
So we don't think about that because we're all underwater all the time.
Like money.
Yeah. So if you're in a shitty relationship, or if your job is difficult, or I don't know, again, financially, if you're struggling, those kind of things, just kind of chronic prolonged stress is a risk factor that we all have to worry about because we're all stressed out all the time. And then a significant life event. And those are the things that people see on the outside. They're like, oh, Joe got a divorce and then he took his life. Or, you know, Susie got diagnosed with X, Y, or Z. Like, you see this big, significant one event, and then that's what they attribute the cause-effect thing to.
Mm-hmm.
Where in actuality, it's just another piece, it's just another risk factor. And at a lot of, you know, in a lot of cases, it's just the last piece of the pie to go in. But again, these are all things.
Like the straw.
Yeah.
But you're making, I think I keep hearing you say over and over again, we all have all these things.
All these things, yeah.
So just because we have somebody who is taken his or her their own life, it does not mean that there was something about them that was just so unique that, you know, it's not stuff that we are dealing with as individuals ourselves. They just, all of these things came together in this unfortunate, you know, I don't want to say it, just all at the same time.
Yeah, it's like that perfect storm.
That perfect storm.
Yeah.
Who is at greater risk, greatest risk?
Everybody.
But is there a certain like age range that seems to have more attempts or more people who have taken his or her their own life?
Yeah, middle-age white men still is kind of like the go-to. It also increases really dramatically over the age of 85.
Now, you mean in terms of having
death by
died
suicide.
By... Okay, but not attempt. We're talking about death by suicide.
Right, death by suicide. Okay. Middle-aged white men, and then those above the age of 85... Huh. Which surprises me and doesn't. Like, it makes sense because there's so many issues that go on when you're that old a lot of times. But, like, to take the step to me sounded pretty extreme.
Yeah.
Women attempt. So men die by suicide 3 or 4 times more often than women. And then women attempt a lot more than men.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder why white. Why white people?
I don't know. Obviously, you know, culture has a big part in it, whether it's just kind of your cultural community or if you have more like strong religious ties. We can talk about this later, but they're considered protective factors.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're coming from a place where you're being taught from an early age, like this is not a choice, this is not an option. something really bad happens to you in the afterlife, or, you know, there's different things that culturally kind of are protective factors and will prevent you from doing something down the line. I mean, obviously nothing's foolproof.
Right.
But I think that definitely plays like a significant role in it.
One of the things that in the research I've done, and you can tell me if I'm wrong because you are the expert, I am not, but is that in the white population, the women tend to be the ones that are in charge of the social life of the couple or the family. But in Latino, you know, populations and Black populations, they're more community based. Mm-hmm. And so it's they have more surrounding support systems. So should they lose their significant other, should, for example, a man loses his wife, you know, then there's a whole, you know, group of people. Yeah. And like you said, the church over here, not that white people don't have churches and stuff like that, but there just seems to be a greater sense of community, mm-hmm. which you said is a protective factor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's my understanding. What about, teenagers? Like, I think I've heard a lot about, teenagers have a lot more attempts and, you know, than we see in other parts of the population.
So full transparency, you know, that this is adolescence and children is not my area of expertise by any means.
Right, right.
So I don't have really any like clinical experience working with this population.
Gotcha.
But I do know that through the pandemic and everything that was happening, that is a population where the numbers are on the rise.
Wow. Is that the social part of it?
I don't know that anyone can pinpoint that. Again, like I'm not knee deep in that research. So I'm sure there is something out there that can elaborate more than I can with the adolescent population.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's too soon to tell. Because like I said, the numbers went up nationally so much.
During the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, 2021, 48,000 is a lot. I mean, just a couple of years ago, it was at 45. It used to be the 12th leading cause of death. Now it's the 11th. Like, I mean, but again, it's hard to tell because you can't do the causation piece because the pandemic brought on a whole new wave of just all these issues that we never had before. And then compounding the isolation and the job loss and the mental illness spikes and everything else. I don't know if we can parse it out.
Gotcha.
But I know that teens, it's definitely a more concerning population now. And you see numbers every once in a while where there's like young kids making attempts and everything else. And it's also a population where contagion is a thing.
Contagion.
Yeah. So what I mean by contagion, you hear the word, is when you're exposed to the suicide of someone else, that makes you more likely to do something to yourself. So when we're talking about this kind of at base level, if you hear about a suicide on the news, no, that will not plant a seed and cause someone to go and like harm themselves. Or if a teen has a peer that takes their life, that will not cause them to go and engage in that action. Where it does impact is that when you have a teen that has the same set of pie pieces as the one who took their life, that's when contagion can become a thing.
Oh.
So when you have a teenager who is already struggling with depression, anxiety, difficulties in the home, bullying at school, what have you, something like that, and then they are exposed to the death of a peer, that's when contagion can be a thing and up the risk for them to harm themselves down the line. Which is terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Like, it's really, really scary.
Scary for parents.
Yeah.
I mean, for all of us, for sure, but scary, definitely scary for parents.
Yeah.
What, in terms of the impact, like, how does a person, you know, obviously, when we have a death in our lives, we all have the, you know, the fallout of our grieving experience. Are there unique aspects of the grieving experience for somebody who's a survivor of suicide?
Yes. How deep into this do you want me to go?
Go.
Because it's really applicable to the second half of
the second half,
the second piece.
So is there anything general? And then we'll go into a little bit more deep when we talk about
definitely.
Your story.
So there's actual research out there that supports that the grief experience of those who lose someone to suicide looks different than the grief of those who die by non-traumatic loss. And the same kind of goes for like an overdose death mm-hmm. or a motor vehicle accident or something like that. So we're talking about traumatic loss versus non-traumatic loss here. And it's because you can't, like the lack of anticipation, mm-hmm. So the suddenness, the shock value of it, and then the lack of understanding afterwards, there's no closure, there's no comprehension of anything that happened. So they're saying that all of that can kind of complicate the grieving process, mm-hmm. make things more difficult. And with the stigma and everything else that goes with it, like whether it's just like people being overt about it and making hurtful comments and talking about suicide as yeah. weak or the easy way out, different things like that, statements like that, or more covert things like just pure avoidance.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder for people, unless they're looking in the right places, to get kind of just like natural grief support like you or I would if, you know, an elderly parent died of natural causes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, it's definitely, it's a more arduous process. It's more difficult to find what you need, especially because you don't know what the hell you need. Like, how do you know what
to
expect?
Or where to go.
Yeah, I mean, we all have loss, we have grief, and you kind of like learn what the process looks mm-hmm. like by more typical expected death. Mm-hmm. But this just slaps you across the face.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you need. No one knows what you need.
No. And it's confusing, I think. And again, I'll try not to step over into where we're going to be going, yeah. you know, with your story, but the you know, some people can have a sense of abandonment mm-hmm. and then guilt, but then relief and then guilt over the relief mm-hmm. and the, you know, the, okay, I'm already going, you know, I'm looking at your
face,
like
That's all the things.
Like,
yeah.
And I think that also, you know, from what I understand of it, is the, what did I miss? When was there something here that was my mm-hmm. fault? Or I mean, I've definitely worked with clients that still don't know really what to do with the fact that they don't want people around them to know, like you said, and so they avoid talking about it. So then now they're pulling away from any kind of, you know, potential social support that they possibly could have. The level of anger could be different. I mean, first of all, and I've said it about a billion times, there are no 5 stages of grief. You will never hear me talk about stages of grief. It's absolutely absurd.
There aren't?
There are not.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure. And I'm 100% sure that the research says that there's no 5 stages of grief. So anyway, in case you didn't hear me, there's no 5 stages of grief.
You done?
So, yeah, I get it. So, you know, the anger that people will feel isn't necessarily a stage. It's that anger of like, I can't believe he would do this to us.
Yeah.
And I know that when I remember co-running a survivors of suicide loss group with Marcus, one of our clinicians here at the center, very, very just being able to be surrounded by other people who are like, oh my God, you get it. You'll never hear me say, oh, I lost my sister to suicide. You know, I know exactly how you feel. No, you don't know exactly how I feel, but you can relate to probably a lot of the stuff that's pretty unique.
Thank you for listening to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We want to be a resource for anyone who is experiencing loss, and this is a simple way you can help us spread the word. Check out our show description. There you'll find a link to connect with me on social media, as well as helpful articles and resources.